Wintrust Business Lunch. Stephen Esposito, President, Yellowstone Wealth Management in Lake Forest. Stephen, how do you score this week? What's going on?
It's a wild one. Hi, John. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, it puts it mildly. We had a needed 5 to 10% correction, which is normal. But it was triggered by, you know, what happened with the carry trade in Japan. And that, my understanding now, that's all been unwound. It had really little to do with the economy and whatnot. But it still, I think, shook a lot of people and scared a lot of investors, seeing the kind of drops you've seen. Down days to me like that provide buying opportunities. I have a different perspective. When that happens, I'm looking for companies I've been waiting to buy, and I think that's presented us some really nice opportunities.
Yeah, well, can you be more specific? I know you can't, but what kind of buying opportunities are you talking about?
I can tell you in the sectors in general. I mean, yeah, a lot of the AI stocks, and it's funny how AI suddenly became not a darling overnight, but a lot of them now, if big if, the street's projected earnings for 2025 are accurate. Some of them have come down to some pretty good valuation methods. A lot of the big names you'll know and the second levels. So just I would do the homework and look and see what the projected earnings are and how comfortable you are with them. And you can see some of them trading at maybe 20, 25 times estimates, which for that industry, if it is what they say, that's a good opportunity because a lot of these stocks have been cut in half. So there's some opportunities there, I think, in the financials. I think there's definitely opportunities there as the yield curve improves. And I think consumer discretionary, which has gotten hit because of this fear of a recession, there's opportunities there. So I think there's a lot. You know, a lot of companies got hit pretty hard in the last 4 days. And I'm actually having a problem trying to weed them all out. There's so many that I want to look at, as opposed to 2 weeks ago, there was very few I could buy.
Yeah. Okay. But do talk a little bit more about what happened there and what it meant. I mean, I have heard a little bit about people that trade currencies between Japan and the United States and what Japan has since done. But it seems to me like there was something more fundamental to American stocks and the American economy and interest rates and the Fed and so on and so forth. You don't see it as something writ large like that?
I hate when, you know, that's over the decades, you've always seen something like that, where something somewhere triggers a major reallocation. This trade has been unwound. Basically, people are borrowing in Japan at 0% interest and going out and investing someplace else. Japan talked about raising interest rates and has a dramatic effect on their borrowing costs, et cetera. And all the it's very tangled, so to speak, if that's the right word to use in terms of it triggers one thing after another, which all this leverage drives me crazy, but it happened and it unwound. And my understanding now is what we hear, that it's been unwound. And now the Japanese said they're not going to raise interest rates until things calm down. So that's a good thing. And why you're seeing some confidence come back into the market.
Okay.
But now
you've
got fears of what's happening in the Middle East. Can happen any moment.
I've been pressing Stephen Esposito on the Wintrust Business Lunch today to give us a sense of what happened earlier this week. He's the president of Yellowstone Wealth Management. You see buying opportunities there. So the earth hasn't changed, Stephen?
No, it's not changed. But in all fairness, though, a lot of things happened at once. You had the spike in the unemployment rate to 4.3.
Yep.
The street was looking for 4.1. So that kind of spooked the market a little bit. The talk now was the Fed was behind the curve again. They should have lowered rates sooner, and that they're waiting too long to lower rates, which now would trigger a recession, which triggered, combined with everything else going on, right? All of it just created one big day to sell. Big profits. Let's take some gains. We're worried about what's happening in the economy, the unemployment rate, et cetera. And I think it just snowballed at that point. And now I think maybe cooler heads are prevailing as some numbers we had today. I think it's so much of an emphasis on every bullet point that comes out, every piece of economic data, as if that's written in stone, and it's not. I heard today that, for example, you had lease rates in commercial office space actually went up for the first time in 2 years. So that's a good thing. They're actually gaining tenants, if you can believe that.
Yeah.
The fear of a recession was back on the table. The Fed was late again. And I think that compounded with everything just snowballed. The VIX jumped up to, I think, 60, and it was in the 15 range, the volatility.
Yeah.
So that didn't help. And it just triggered one algorithm after another that affected it. But, again, I've learned that when you have panics like that, that's when you got to look for the bargains. when everyone, there's blood in the streets, as they say, and that's what you had. But I don't think it's something really to look at, to worry about right now.
Well, more data comes in. People were thinking, I can't retire now, or if I've retired, I've got to live differently, or whatever. I mean, it was that sort of a shockwave that I think ripped through the screen. You know, you had that notable trader, or it wasn't an economist, I think it was a financial guy, saying that the Fed needs to call an emergency meeting and lower interest rates 0.75 point. I mean, that's a panic.
Oh, absolutely. That the Fed waited, again, Fed waited too long, and they missed the opportunity. So now that we went from earlier in the year about 6 rate cuts, then as recently as a week ago, they're looking for 1 rate cut. Now they're back on the table for 6 rate cuts over the next several months. You wonder why investors are confused and scared. They're 1 minute, it changes by the day. To try to keep cooler heads and look at what's going on, and inflation, I don't think, is here. I think it's actually cooling. I think people are missing the fact that the yield curve between the twos, the two and tens, has been inverted for 2 years now, the longest in history of the United States. And now the two-year is only about 4 basis points above the 10-year. You'll probably go to a normal yield curve here shortly, and especially if the Fed cuts rates. I mean, you have a 5% money market rate, and you got a 4% 10-year rate. You need that rate to come down, and the Fed should cut. I believe the Fed should cut as soon as they can, and cut more, and not worry about the inflation component, because that is coming down hard. So I just, again, there's lack of confidence in what is going on in Washington with the Fed, among other things, the uncertainty of a potential World War III out there. You have an election coming up. All these unknowns are scaring investors who've had good profits on the year. So it's a good excuse to take some profits.
Yeah, well, clearly that's what happened. Well, so what do you think then? 1, 2, or 3 rate cuts this year?
I would prefer at least 50 basis points coming in. That's my personal opinion. I think they should, again, I think they're once again behind. I think 50 should be at least, and the signal that they're going to be doing more and making that clear to the market that we're going to cut more, whatever is needed, and giving confidence to the market. And markets don't like uncertainty, and that's where you're at right now. So uncertainty also breeds opportunity in the marketplace, because when people are afraid, they sell, and those who are more confident and have experience will go in there and take advantage of that. So I think that's where investors should be right now, looking for opportunities.
Well, I suppose people that didn't sell on Tuesday are recovering today, right? I mean, they were paper losses if you didn't do anything.
Right.
I did hear that something like 80% of the sales on Monday or Tuesday were a result of algorithms, that just programs, computer programs, were making the decisions. Does that sound right to you?
Oh, absolutely. I've been complaining about this for a decade. Computer algorithms are not fundamental investors like you and I were, or your listeners are. The computers just move based on whatever they're programmed to move, and you see this crazy volatility. I wasn't getting any clients calling me to sell anything.
Really?
Not one person was panicking or calling. And a lot of my colleagues told me the same thing. So who was doing all the selling? The computers are triggered, and it has an effect in both directions. It triggers stocks. You see many stocks go from 100 to 300 relatively quickly, and they go the same way down, 100 to 300. And that's what investors have to be wary of when they're investing and making sure what they're doing. But you're correct, 100%.
Computers dominated
80% of the trading.
If you're buying the indexes, then that was a real buying opportunity for you. Or if the program that you set up when you maybe signed up with your employer, if it is making monthly purchases and it's in an index fund, there was maybe still is some real opportunity then, huh?
I think if you get into individual positions, yeah, too many investors have gotten away from individual companies. They've gotten into this index algorithm mentality, which is causing all the volatility. I personally think it shouldn't even happen. I think it's undermining the sanctity of the financial markets by seeing these massive swings. The value of companies, John, doesn't change by 20% in an hour based on a press release or an economic data point. And I think it's undermining the confidence of investors, and I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I prefer if we had some better regulations on that area. It would make everything much better for everybody.
I understand that, but I mean, we don't talk about individual stock prices. We do, but as much as we always note how the Dow or the S&P, maybe we should talk more about the Russell 2000, but anyway, we just talk about those things, and investors, I think, are comfortable just as Terry Savage is, you don't have to beat the market, just be the market. And that's the value of an index fund. You're not anti-index fund, are you?
Oh, not at all. There's something for everybody out there. Not at all. But the problem is this, where everybody is pouring the same amount of money into a specific index, it creates it's self-fulfilling. If everybody's buying it, it keeps pushing it up and pushing it up until everybody starts to sell and you see what happens. So this concentration in a handful of names or a couple of indexes, to me, undermines the quality of the market at all. I mean, for the Russell 2000 to be worth less than any one or two of major players in the entire S&P 500 is ridiculous. That's the scary part for me, this concentration in a small number of companies versus the rest of the market.
Stephen Esposito says there are opportunities out there. It sounds like he's going to be, if he's not right now, a buyer. President of Yellowstone Wealth Management in Lake Forest, Yellowstone. WM is the website.com. Okay, Stephen, we always appreciate your conversation. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Michael Jacobson is the president and CEO of the Illinois Hotel and Lodging Association. Welcome back, Michael. I'm glad you've got some time for us because it's T-minus 11 days for the you-know-what.
Busy day, but always time for you, John. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah. What is it like for your industry right now in Chicago? Are the hotels, the restaurants, are the businesses ready?
We're ready. We're ready to welcome everybody with open arms. I think everybody's excited, especially there's been a new level of excitement, I would say, in the last 3 weeks with the change at the top of the ticket. But I think at the end of the day, everybody's excited to roll out the red carpet and if nothing else, just really show people everything that Chicago has to offer and hopefully change a lot of people's minds about how great of a city that Chicago truly is.
50,000 is the number that we're hearing. Is that what you're expecting, or do you already have bookings for 50,000?
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't measure bookings in real time. There's no way to really capture that. But that is the number that the DNC has been using since day one. And I think you're starting to see, even the past 3 weeks, I mentioned the added excitement, I think that there's been an increased rate of booking. I know I used to work in and live in D.C. and used to go to some of these conventions, and I know I didn't make my travel plans until about 2 to 3 weeks out. So I think you're starting to see just kind of the procrastination pick up combined with the added excitement of Vice President Harris at the top of the ticket. So
yeah.
we're still very optimistic that it's going to be a very positive week for us.
Yeah, the number two pick for that matter. I mean, it really has been an interesting week, and if that energizes people more, I don't know if they're going to have another cocktail or bring a friend, but there certainly is a renewed energy. A lot of us were wondering what was going to happen outside the hotels and convention center or the United Center, but now it's going to be very interesting just what happens on the inside. And there's big parties planned, like at Navy Pier. Can you talk a little bit about stuff like that? Are you got any inside scoop there?
Yeah, really, I think the benefits are going to extend even outside of the Central Business District. Yes, there's a big party at Wrigley Field. There's a big party at Navy Pier. But there are venues really across the entire city and in really every neighborhood that are being rented out and booked for this. A big goal of our partners over at Choose Chicago, the official tourism agency in Chicago, they've even put together visitor guides for family members that are coming with the attendees, or even the attendees yeah. themselves, if they have a little bit of free time. Outside of the official parties that are kind of buyouts and where you rent the entire facility, at least go and explore everything that every neighborhood has to offer across the city.
Yeah. It seems like Milwaukee did not see the crush of business that they had hoped for. And I'm wondering if Chicago is going to see that. And is this going to benefit individual businesses or citizens? The complaint is always when NASCAR or Lollapalooza comes to town that it crowds out everybody else. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, let me focus on the first part of your question first, because I think outside of even the strong performance that we're expecting for that 1 week, outside of just those few days, the impact, the long-term impacts are really going to benefit us as a city. For better or for worse, there's a lot of these political influencers, or especially in the media, we're going to be able to have hundreds of media here using the Chicago backdrop as their, I'm sorry, the Chicago skyline as their backdrop during their 24/7 broadcast for five straight days. So the people that have been framing the narrative about the city of Chicago, hopefully things go off without a hitch and we're confident that they're going to, and that we're able to change a lot of those perceptions. And then in terms of your question around kind of the residential feel, I know that events like the DNC, Lollapalooza, NASCAR, there are logistical challenges. There's more noise, more traffic in the downtown area. I get it. But at the end of the day, what a lot of Chicagoans don't realize is that if you took the tax revenue that's generated by not just hotels, but tourism, people that come here, eat in our restaurants, shop in our stores, ride in our taxi cabs, if you take all that tax revenue out of the Chicago economy, every Chicago household would be on the hook for $1,600 more each year in additional taxes. So even if you don't work directly in our industry, and even if it causes some annoyances a couple weekends a year, every Chicagoan should really be rooting for the success of our industry. And it's events like the DNC that are going a long way, especially coming out of the pandemic, in boosting up our industry.
Yeah, I get that. I spoke earlier this week about the attendance at Lollapalooza. 400,000 was maybe the total person count. And that's a tremendous amount of people. And a number I saw floated out, maybe it was from Choose Chicago. No, it's actually from, I think, the producers of Lollapalooza itself, was close to $500 million were spent in the city because of Lollapalooza. I got to be honest with you, I'm a little suspicious of those numbers. But that's the trade, isn't it?
Oh, you look at Lollapalooza in particular. Last year when Taylor Swift came to town, people always ask, why can't Taylor Swift come in town every year? Because it was a record-setting weekend for us in the hotel and tourism industry. What I respond to that is that we realistically do have a Taylor Swift-style event every year, and that's Lollapalooza. Every single year, Lolla weekend is our top-performing weekend of the entire summer. And so we don't doubt those numbers because we see it in real dollars, just how it's spent in our hotels. And then again, you don't just go back to your hotel at the end of the concert at the end of the night. People are going to the after parties and they're going to bars and restaurants, and the impact really spreads across the entire city. So again, especially as we wait for critical segments of our industry, like the individual transient business traveler, to recover, because that and international travel are still slow to recover after COVID. Mm-hmm. It's these major events that are buoying our industry and really contributing to the recovery rate at the pace where it is.
Can you talk about occupancy rates right now, Michael, either for the Taylor Swift weekend or the DNC or in general?
Yeah, so for the DNC in particular, look at that same exact week last year. It's actually historically a pretty quiet week for us. Keep in mind, a lot of kids are going back to school that exact week, or even some are going back to school next week already. And so as right when kids go back to school, demand typically drops off in every market across the U.S., but in Chicago in particular. So it's typically a quiet week. Last year, we were at a 69% occupancy rate for that same week. So a pretty quiet week. We anticipate that being much better this year. In terms of overall occupancy, our analysts expect us to finish this year at about 67%. Total occupancy for the year. That's up from 65% at the end of last year, but it's still down from the peak at 74% where we were in 2019. So things are certainly getting better, but we still have a long ways to go in terms of the recovery, and that's why we're dependent more than ever on not only these major events, but on McCormick Place and being filled with conventions as regularly as possible.
Where do you expect the conventioneers are going to stay?
Most of them will be in the downtown market. That's actually what set Chicago apart in our bid for the DNC, is that unlike previous host cities where some people had to stay 60, even 90 minutes outside of the city at an official hotel, all 50,000 people, if they wanted to, could stay downtown. We have 50,000 rooms downtown. So most of them will be staying downtown. We are hearing some trickle effect out into the suburbs in the broader Chicagoland region. But even if it's not official DNC attendees, there are people that are still planning to come to Chicago that week, either for leisure, to visit family, or for business travel, that simply just can't afford a room downtown because DNC has nudged up the prices. And so the entire region will benefit on what we call compression, of pushing regular travelers out to the suburbs that otherwise would have stayed downtown. So really, the entire region has a lot to benefit from in 2 weeks from now.
The convention is at the United Center, but I understand events are going on at McCormick Place, too. What are they going to do there? Do you know? Is it like a trade show or something?
Yeah, so there's a ton of ancillary meetings that are involved in political conventions, daytime meetings, a lot of state delegation meetings that are either happening at McCormick Place or some of them are even happening in our hotel ballrooms. There's a lot more than just the evening speeches that you watch on TV that happen as part of these conventions. So all of the official daytime activities, a lot of the governance meetings related to just the Democratic Party will happen during the day. That will all happen at McCormick Place. And then, of course, what most people watch on TV or online, the evening speeches, the high-profile events, those will all happen at at United Center. But there, like I said, then there's going to be a ton of private parties and private meetings that are happening either within our hotel ballrooms or in venues really across the city.
If I wanted a celebrity watch, what hotel would I stand out in front of?
I think you have a pretty safe bet at a lot of those. If you are a political nerd the way I am, I don't think there's any better city in the world to be at that in 2 weeks from now than Chicago. So I think it's going to be a pretty safe bet to get glimpses of political influencers really wherever you go across the Central Business District.
I'm thinking maybe the Peninsula or the Palmer House, the Drake, or some of the classics up and down the Gold Coast. Where are you going to be with your camera?
I'm going to be crisscrossing, visiting our members, and I'll be in and out of the convention center and United Center myself. So hopefully I'll be able to see a lot of your listeners across town as well. And that's an important thing to note. Even if you're not directly related or you don't have credentials to go into the DNC, still come downtown. Yes, there's going to be a security perimeter around actual McCormick Place and United Center, but the rest of the city is going to be open and running usual. So don't let it dissuade you from making a trip downtown and still booking a restaurant for a dinner reservation or exploring a lot of our great attractions downtown. I think a lot of people are scared, but I don't know that that's necessarily warranted. Most of the city will be fully open and operational.
Oh, I was thinking that very thing. I mean, 50,000 is a big number, except in Chicago. We do 50,000 and you don't even notice it. So we can certainly accommodate that. And you weren't going to hang out in front of McCormick Place anyway. So continue to enjoy the city when it's nice as it has been in Chicago. Michael Jacobson, the president and CEO of the Illinois Hotel and Lodging Association. Michael, we'll touch bases with you later next week or the week after. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, John, as always.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago hotels are thriving. The latest data from the city's marketing arm, Choose Chicago, shows hotel room demand during the first 6 months of this year up 4.2% over 2023, with 5.2 million room nights. Hotel revenue was nearly 4% higher than 2023 at nearly $1.2 billion. Choose Chicago says there were 10 different conventions in the city during the first half of the year that set all-time attendance records. There's a report that Walgreens is considering selling its stake in Village MD. The Deerfield-based chain in a U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission filing says it's evaluating options for Village MD because of substantial ongoing and future cash requirements. The options include the sale of all or part of the Village MD business, restructuring, or other strategic opportunities. Walgreens had hoped to use Village MD as its entrance into the primary healthcare business, but the drugstore chain has been struggling with profitability. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now the business of food. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you, and let's begin with a little Dean Martin.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Well, the moon may be out tonight. There will be plenty of pizza, and maybe you'll find amore. It is festa time in Little Italy on Taylor Street.
It opens tonight, 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. Tomorrow, 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, noon until 10 p.m.
More about that after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. And maybe drive it over to Chicago's Taylor Street, where you'll find a lot of Italians, including this guy.
Yes, sir. Ron Onesti, chairman, Little Italy Festa on Taylor Street.
4 days of pasta.
All the food is being served on the street itself. It's bistro style. A couple of them, like Peanut Park, Rockin' Ravioli, and Rosebud, actually expand their restaurant operations on the street with full tables as restaurant style, but outside Sotto la Stella, as we say, under the stars.
Some of Chicago's favorite restaurants.
We've got Pompeii, Freddy's from 31st Street. We've got the Bocce Pizza people here. We have a new restaurant called Rockin' Ravioli with braised short rib ravioli, with chicken Alfredo ravioli. I mean, it's really, really cool stuff that you don't normally see at a festival.
Lots and lots of food and lots of music.
Six different stages of entertainment. Our main stage, of course, is populated with entertainers from Las Vegas, local performers, of course, the big ones like Tony Ocean, Denise Tomasello.
And, you know, you can't have a festival on Taylor Street without Tay-Tay.
Yes, the popularity of Taylor Swift tributes has been off the charts, and we're really excited about that. Young ladies, an Italian-American, who's going to be performing. It's going to be a really good time here.
It's all happening beginning tonight on Taylor Street.
It's a reunion of families and friends, and it feels like neighborhood. You know, it just feels like you should be here. It's just a great time back in the old neighborhood.
On the food calendar, I'm not sure you'll be able to find this at Festa on Taylor Street, but it is National Mochi Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Today is National Pickleball Day, and the Association of Pickleball Professionals started in Chicago. They've got an event coming up to help out our friends at Misericordia. Tom Webb's on the phone line, the Chief Marketing Officer there. Welcome back, Tom.
Thank you very much for having me. How are you?
Good. How's your year been since we've last spoken? What have you all been up to?
Oh, you know, very quiet. Just been kind of hanging out, not really doing very much in the America's fastest growing sport. That is completely untrue. It has been absolutely intense in the last 12 months. We've announced all sorts of great new initiatives. We have been running bigger and better events. We had nearly 1,800 players competing at our last tournament in Newport Beach, California. And we're going to have nearly 1,000 people out at Highland Park in Chicago, August 28th to September the 1st. And I'm really pleased that you mentioned that Misericordia partnership as well. We're so honored to be partnering with one of Chicago's great organizations to help raise funds for Misericordia. Anybody who wants to come along and watch the action can go to the app.global. Purchase your special Misericordia ticket for Sunday, which is just $100, proceeds of which will go to Misericordia, get you great viewing, it'll get you merchandise, it'll get you food and beverages, and a really good day out and amongst some very, very happy people playing this incredible sport.
For the Association of Pickleball Professionals, so the app.global is the website. Are you looking for competitors or just fans?
So we are still looking competitors, but I will tell you, we're very, very close to capacity for this tournament. Obviously, the number of players that we can entertain any event is kind of dictated by how many courts we have access to. And we've got some incredibly good facilities at Highland Park, actually some of the best that we go to anywhere in the country. There's a really, really good atmosphere there. But we are close to that 1,000 player number, including all of the pros who will be coming and the amateurs. So I'm kind of more interested in saying to folks who maybe have played a bit of pickleball and want to come and see how it's being played at the highest level, or if you've never played, you know nothing about it, come along and watch, because it's going to be a really good day out.
It is fun to watch. Do you think that pickleball should be in the Olympics?
Great question, and obviously extremely timely. I not only think it should be in the Olympics, I think it will be in the Olympics. It won't be in LA 2028. The process by which the IOC examines sports and then brings them in as exhibition sports before including them as full Olympic status sports takes a little longer than 4 years. My personal guess is it'll be 2036. Some folks think 2032. But I think there's a really important point with this, which is I may be wrong about this, so please, by all means, tell me if you have a different opinion. This would be the first ever American-born and American-created sport that goes truly global, both in kind of viewing and participation numbers. And I think that means when it becomes an Olympic sport, I am very hopeful, even as a Brit by birth and a father to a couple of American kids, I am very hopeful that the first Olympic champion will be somebody hailing from the United States, and I'm very confident it will be.
Yeah, how about from Chicago? August 28th to September 1st is the APP Chicago Open. That's the 28th of this month. It's right around the corner. You better click on if you want to get tickets, or if you want to maybe play the game, go to theapp.global, theapp.global. Tom, stay in touch. It's always nice to talk to you.
Likewise. Thank you. Have a great day.
Tom Webb's the Chief Marketing Officer for the Association of Pickleball Professionals. Today's National Pickleball Day.